Welcome to Bank FinTech Fusion from CCG Catalyst Consulting Group. I'm Philip Ryan, and I'm joined today by Mimi Saldado of Instant.org. Mimi was an early product manager at Simple and co-founder of WinWin, which really gamified savings. We'll get into that. And congratulations on your exit with WinWin.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
So at what point in the process did you get involved with Simple? Simple is kind of one of the most legendary fintech companies.
One of the first. Yeah. So I was employee number 30-something, and I was actually hired onto the customer support team. So that was really one of the more legendary pieces of the business, I would say. It's probably the part that is still famous, if you will. I scaled that business out and left around 300 employees. So I really saw lots of phases of its growth. Was there before the acquisition of BBVA Compass, so have seen some things.
So with that, the customer relations, what was the mission behind that? What were you told when you came in, and how did that go?
Yeah, so I think at that time, so Simple is really founded at sort of the height of the 1% movement. And so there was this, feeling inside that we wanted to do things very differently and that customer experience was at the forefront of what Simple was developing.
Because banks were so bad at it.
Yep. and really hadn't treated their customers very well previously. And as we all know, in that time, especially dealing with customer support at a bank is not always the most pleasant experience. And so we wanted to really use customer support as a way to, connect with customers and really understand what they truly needed out of a product. So customer support ended up becoming a really interesting part of the product development process. And they were always in the beginning, they had a very strong voice in that process as well.
Can you talk a bit about what products you built or developed there within that? Because it's a very broad ranging,
Oh, totally.
Simple's customer support. It's a whole program.
For sure. So I spent a lot of time doing, I've built a lot of things at Simple, but I think probably most specifically within the customer support team, a lot of what it started with wasn't necessarily around what was being built or tooling. It was really more around the culture that we were developing on the customer support team. So at that time, Simple was really high hiring super intelligent, highly empathetic individuals into customer support and then kind of giving them the ability to generate ideas and come up with different ways of doing customer support. And I built out also a lot of our customer support tooling, which really was a pretty key piece of our ability to be able to support customers with that level of service. Technically, I built out parts of the customer support software, which was actually developed internally. We didn't buy that at all externally. That was all developed in-house. I also developed parts of Simple's core banking infrastructure. Probably my most notable product there was I actually built the banking migration product that moved all of Simple's customers from Bancor to Compass
my
after
goodness.
The acquisition.
Oh, yes. My goodness.
That was a project. We could probably have a whole podcast on that specifically.
So you're on the technology side, but obviously customer relations, it's about people. Mm-hmm. How do you think those two things interplay? And was that something you thought about when you were working on that?
Yeah, definitely. I actually think that that's one thread that's maybe carried through my career is, I believe that technology mirrors the people that built it. And so, Simple had a highly empathetic culture, like I said, and the people involved had, varying viewpoints. And that was always something that I found really valuable there. And I think, in the development of products, it's really about, helping people collaborate effectively. And in my opinion, the best teams, the best products I've shipped were built by the most diverse sets of individuals. And so while, technology solves problems, really it's people that solve problems and they employ technology as well. So in my view, I like to collaborate with people and I like a lot of crazy viewpoints because I think that everyone kind of coming from a different perspective really lends itself to developing something that is workable for a lot of people on the other side.
And that diversity in that team, did that stick together when you moved over to BBVA? And actually, can you talk about how things at Simple changed when it was acquired?
Totally. You know, I think because we had always had Bancorp as a banking partner, we were pretty used to working with a more traditional financial institution as a partner. So throughout the experience of working with Bancorp, I think that really set us up to really work well with BBVA because we understood sort of how the more entrenched institutional banks really thought of technology and really thought of Simple. In that time,
and Bancorp is thought of as one of the better ones, right?
They are, yeah. But I would say, like, at that time, we were really one of the first to be doing this. And so they were learning with us. And I think that was a pretty interesting experience. I would say that if you were to ask folks at Bancor, they would tell you we learned a lot with Simple that we either replicate or don't replicate now. I think so because we had that background with Bancor, it made the transition fairly easy. But I think what ended up shifting a little bit is I think the diversity still happened. But, you know, I think it's working with, risk-averse bank. And for a product company, for a technology company that wanted to do things differently and outside of the box and having all these creative ideas, it was a lot of collaboration is the nice word to figure out what we could actually develop. Migration was an incredible project because it had to be taken through two different banks' compliance teams, and that was an experience for me
yikes.
In itself.
Yikes!
But yeah, I think like we kind of learned what worked well and what didn't work well in those relationships, and what I found was it really is a matter of just being like communicative and helping them understand why you wanted to do something, why something was important, and then for me it was really asking the questions about why can't we do that if I got a no? And just trying to understand, was it risk aversion or was there like some act, like a reason that was, easy to understand and documented that I could see and concept with.
Can you describe some of those meetings when, I'm picturing Simple on one side of the table and either the bank or BBVA on the other side mm-hmm. of the table? What was the kind of energy in the room like?
Yeah, they were usually these epic conference calls with like 50 people on a call. So that was always an interesting time. But yeah, I mean, usually the general story was usually Simple has a crazy idea and wants to do something. Hey, can we do it? Was usually the way that those conversations went. And so
why can't we do it?
Exactly. Well, I would be like, how can we do it? It was a lot of requirements gathering, right? They would be like, no, we don't like it because of this. And I'd be like, okay, well, why don't we like it because of this? Tell me more about that. Let's dig into it. And so I was really like, I think Simple did a good job of positioning itself in a curious manner to understand where they were coming from. But certainly like things were escalated when we had disagreements because, there were folks who, again, like look at things from a risk averse perspective and Simple wanted to provide the experience that we wanted to provide. And so things were escalated and usually it was a conversation about like, hey, what are truly the risks here? Are the risks actually that large as we're making them seem? Or is there a way that we can maybe enable this in a slightly different way?
Right. So you moved on from Simple to Win-Win. Can you explain a bit about Win-Win?
Yeah, totally. So I co-founded Win-Win with David Ronick. Hi, David. He previously co-founded Stash Invest. And him and I had both obviously spent time in savings and thinking about savings in different ways. The last product that I led at Simple was actually the savings vertical. So I had just come out of thinking a lot about helping consumers with savings. So at Simple, one of the major challenges was in order to help people save within that context, it was a bank account, right? And so it required that you, put your direct deposit into it. And that's hard. It's, consumers are fairly apathetic and that can be really challenging. Getting a paycheck.
Savings is so hard. It's such a hard problem.
It's a really challenging problem. Yeah. And so Win-Win was my approach to it, looking at it from a different perspective. So Americans lose over $100 billion a year in gambling. And I was like, oh my gosh, if we could divert some of those losses into savings, that could be incredible. But it's also a highly, addictive, it's a highly addictive thing. And so a lot of what we were thinking about with Win-Win was how do we make you addicted to savings? Is that possible? And it was, we built a really awesome engagement product. But the thing that we never really loved was we just never found a business model that we loved and thought was really powerful. Charging these consumers' fees was really
hard.
Yeah, that's
the challenge with savings, right? Yep, how are you making money off this?
Totally. And really, like, that was the biggest issue. Like, we tested through a bunch of different, a bunch of different business models and things. And we were like, okay, nothing's really feeling like super solid. But what we did feel like was we've built a really cool engagement product. People are really engaged. They play our games. They interact with the app far more than they interact with other apps. And so that was kind of what led us to be like, maybe the option here is to actually sell this as a feature, because it's an amazing feature, to someone who has a business model on the other side that's already proven out and works.
Right.
Yep.
So you're dealing a lot with human psychology in your first two roles. Are you dealing with that as well with instant and onboarding?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. All of product management to me is human psychology. Like, a lot of my like product belief is around, like, again, I am obsessive about user research. I user research everything many times and I love it. I love hearing people's experiences with the product and their lives and what they're going through, because I mean, truly savings, as you know, we've discussed, is also an emotional has a lot of emotions tied to it.
So people, much of money is emotional. Exactly. And everyone tries to be so rational.
Yeah. And it's not rational. We have no rational thoughts related to our financial positions, or very little of them. And so, that's something that I've leaned into, I think, throughout my career, is really using psychology to understand what consumers really need and want. And when they say they feel things about something, what does that mean kind of tactically? So while I would say, you know, onboarding has maybe, I'm looking at less of like a behavioral kind of piece of it. I do certainly look at and
well, there's always where you drop off, right? Where do people fail? Where does the process fail?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you know, like fixing products and reworking onboarding flows is really about like, how do you, emotionally engage someone enough to like get them to the next step of the process? So I think I always kind of use psychology, and I think all good product people do, but it might just look different through a different lens.
So to back up just a bit, can you just give us an overview of the vision behind Instant, which you co-founded?
Yes, totally. I'm very excited about Instant. I've built onboarding flows multiple times in my career now. And every time, it's really challenging. Building an onboarding stack, and when I say onboarding, I mean a consumer online account opening, it's a challenge. I've experienced the vendor roulette, where we're trying to figure out what service providers make the best stack so that I can get the most people through my system or into my product, but without, you know, exposing myself to too much risk on the other side. So the vision with Instant is instant onboarding. It is what it sounds like. So from a business perspective, we're trying to help businesses. We want to basically buy out onboarding from the market wholesale. So we know that banks mostly and financial institutions are not very good at onboarding customers. They reject about 40% of customers that would be good for them, simply because their stacks are inefficient. We want to buy that out from the market and say, you focus on your core, the things that you're really good at, your product. Let us help you with the onboarding piece and making sure you get, you know, good customers in. From the consumer side, we want to build an experience where you never have to fill out an onboarding form, sign up form again, where you just, you essentially, the first time you interact with Instant's form, you type in all your information. The next brand that you go to that uses Instant to do onboarding would just say, hey, welcome back, Phil. Would you like to create an account here? Yes or no? No more forms involved.
What inspired you or what, I guess, is inspiring you as you build Instant? Not particular experiences so much. Well, not particular companies, but kind of experiences that you've...
Yeah, totally. I mean, I am a millennial, and so I am mobile first. I don't like filling out onboarding forms. It's a tedious task. But on the business side, a lot of the reason that that financial services specifically are rejecting so many customers is because millennials are a pretty hard group of people to get data on in the traditional ways. So if you think about, the existing onboarding stacks in the market right now, a lot of them are using these data sources like Experian or Equifax that simply don't have data and don't have credit information specifically for younger demographics. I do not own a house. I do not own a car. And I never have owned any of those things. And so I'm not personally, but there are a lot of people that are considered what's called credit thin file. And so we end up rejecting those those customers, even though they're great customers, we just don't have enough information on them. And so to me, that's, you know, from a financial inclusion perspective, that's really a lot of my motivation here, why I'm really excited about this. We have our stack and our system is using different data sources that aren't those traditional ones that have a better coverage over kind of more types of consumers, specifically for like Gen Z and millennials.
So it sounds like you're doing almost a little bit of underwriting. You talk about taking on the liability for the onboarding process. You're doing much more than just setting up a form.
Yeah. So the way the Instant works is we have a dashboard. You come in and you recreate your brand's onboard, your pre-existing onboarding form. It's a drag and drop experience. You make it look exactly like what your onboarding form looks like. You tell us where you want us to send the good people, the bad people, and the maybes. So that might be, you know, simplebank.com/accepted, for example. And then you give us your public key and we encrypt everything. And then you generate a line of code. With one line of code put on your website or your mobile app, you can outsource your entire onboarding stack to Instant without disrupting any other business processes on the other side. So that's kind of the key value. But but on the other side, we also insure the risk. So if we accidentally onboard a customer that commits fraud on your platform, we are actually insuring that, and we'll pay that out. So yeah, that's a pretty interesting piece of the business. It's something that hasn't really been seen in the market before for onboarding specifically, although you do see it on the transaction side with like chargeback insurance and things like that.
How big a problem is onboarding fraud? I know now people are doing really sophisticated things with synthetic data, and right, there's synthetic people and all these things.
Yeah.
So how are you? How do you catch these people?
Yeah.
Or so, bots or whatever they are.
Totally, yeah. So Instant's platform itself has a bunch of different tooling in it. We are doing biometric checks. We're doing device checks. We're doing identity verification checks. So there's a bunch of things in there that are trying to catch some of what you just mentioned. But I think, yeah, I mean, so onboarding fraud and fraud is a pretty big issue. I know, I won't disclose numbers, but I know that at Simple, the fraud losses were pretty significant. And it was always a challenge for us to manage. And like I said, the challenge there is just really playing vendor roulette and trying to figure out what business logic makes sense, what decision engine makes sense. And it gets very untenable to manage.
All right. Banks in particular, they blame the regulators, but banks say our onboarding process is so difficult because the regulations require it, but sometimes they're going even beyond what is required.
Yep.
So you must have had some, or you're going to have some sort of come to Jesus talks with people who bring really ugly processes in front of you, right?
Yeah. I mean, so like, because, so Sunil and I have a lot of, Madhu is my co-founder. Hello, Sunil. Sunil and I have had tons of experience, working with banks. And so we definitely understand what requirements exist and how they need to see things in order to sort of get through their processes and to be compliant. But yeah, I think, you know, banks are rather protectionist at times. And so I understand that that risk aversion can lead to wanting to put more barriers in the customer's way. However, for every customer or for every business that I know of, banks specifically, their kind of top line problem is getting good customers. They all spend hundreds of millions of dollars on advertising only to then reject a bunch of people. So the message that we're saying is you don't have to do that. Like we can get more good customers through your door. We can 2x your top line revenue is the guarantee that we're making. And we can reduce your OpEx on what you're spending on onboarding. And so I think from that perspective, the message becomes pretty attractive. I think attractive enough to get through some of the message around like wanting to kind of have a lot of barriers to entry in those experiences.
I hear about this stuff all the time. It seems so crazy. People say, oh, I got something in the mail from Marcus and then I sent it in and they rejected me.
Yep, exactly. Yep. It happens a lot. And I think one of the things that I've recalled kind of Sunil talking about is, we cause financial inclusion by putting, identity verification and onboarding in the wrong place in a stack, right? If I, rather than put a credit pull as the first step, which probably will have an impact on especially millennials being rejected from something, why don't you do identity verification first? Make sure they're a good human, they are who they say they are, then do the credit check and do some interest rate arbitrage to make it make sense for your business. But again, back to that financial inclusion point, like Marcus wants to include you as a customer, but as soon as you try to onboard, nope, that you've been rejected. So like, I think there's just some thought on the business side around like, yeah, how do we inclusively bring customers in, and how do we ensure that like what we're selling to them and what we're, how we're talking to them is, you know, positive.
Can you talk a bit about the underbanked and unbanked people? Like underbanked customers sometimes are amazing customers, mm-hmm. and you can demonstrate it. But what are the ways that you, how do you tell a bank that?
Yeah, I think that's back to like the solution I kind of just mentioned. Like if you were to do a credit check on those consumers, probably you would end up rejecting them. You know, they probably don't have the credit scores or history necessary to get through your whatever business, arbitrary business logic you've put in place. And so I think that again, like by using something like Instant and by considering, you know, doing kind of identity verification first, we can identify even people who are un or underbanked. They still have social and online presences. And that's a lot of the data that we're using to do identity verification is kind of social in nature. And so because of that, our reach is just so much more vast. So I think that it really lends itself to kind of that message.
What's the sort of ultimate end state for onboarding applications? So, you know, far in the future, whatever devices or implants we're using, you know, what is onboarding going to be like?
Yeah, even at a bank? My dream and hope is that their onboarding is kind of no longer even a process. Like that's kind of why I love Instant, is because our hypothesis is if we put the same doorway on every brand, then we don't need to ask you who you are a billion times because we know that it's you coming through the doorway. And so that's kind of the vision. I don't know that I dream that Instant become the one player that takes the market, but I do I do love the idea of solutions that completely remove friction. I think that's really our key goal. Is like onboarding right now is just an unnecessary source of friction in a business's, you know, kind of life. And it's not the core value of any business. Onboarding is not what anyone wants to spend time on, but so many people spend so many resources trying to perfect it, only to, you know, get it close enough. So I think that's really what I envision is, I think like this network effect that Instant's trying to build is something that I would love to see, you know, really play forward in the future, where there isn't a need to onboard. You know who I am when I arrive at your website.
Right. You're already onboarded.
Or my app. Yeah, exactly.
Right. As opposed to pre-approved, where you might be declined, even if you're pre-approved,
yeah,
seems like.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, totally.
So you talked a bit about building product and psychology is integral to it. Mm-hmm. Did you have meetings with product people at BBVA or any bank when you're a product person at a startup, or are those teams kept? Is there a wall
They're
between
kind
them?
Of kept relatively walled off. Now that you've asked that, actually, I've met with like a couple, like actively when I was at Simple, I think I met with another product person one time, which is kind of incredible to consider, especially because at the time, BBVA was building what they're calling Open Platform, which is kind of their like platform as a service offering. And we were one of the first customers on it. And so it was kind of funny that as a product manager, we weren't really talking much with the Open Platform product team. But I think product people tend to like get in the mode of like, okay, we're all like running in our direction. And like, I'm not going to look at anyone else right now. You know, and I think like that is, to me, like that is not the best product management approach. I think like deep curiosity and questioning of what's going on around is actually like, to me, the best product mindset. I love, like, I think the best product people are like highly curious and asking a lot of questions about what's going on around them.
What psychological insights do you have about people from your career in dealing with people, dealing with these troubling money issues? What surprises you about people that you've picked up?
Yeah. I don't know that much surprises me, but I guess, you know, I kind of touched on it before. Like, consumers are very apathetic. And unless you have a strong message that emotionally compels them to do something, it's pretty hard to get people to do things. I would say that's true across a lot of things. So I think for me, like, that's a lot of the kind of piece of psychology that I've carried forward is like, how do I emotionally connect my products to consumers? And that's why I'm obsessive about user research, because to me, that's the way to hone in what the message should be. And you have to emotionally pull people through a process. And I think for me, that's really where I've kind of spent the most time thinking about like how psychology impacts like technology and product, is really just around the like emotion that you, that you inspire in the person and that you're connecting with through your product.
Final question. What have you learned about working with banks that you hope to avoid or sidestep with Instant?
Yeah. Look, I think we've made the sales pitch for Instant pretty hard to resist. And so I think that's maybe one difference in the way that I'm now working with banks, is I realize that there are just, again, there's a lot of risk aversion there. And a lot of people who, they're not thinking about this like massive world of startups and the world changing, and it's just a different culture. And so to me, I think the thing that is a little different for me this time and that I'm thinking about is, how do I make my product so compelling that it's hard to say no? And that's really the approach I've taken. I think migration was tough at Simple, because it's compelling, but also like it was just tough to kind of get people through and to the end and everyone to agree on what was going to be there and how we were going to do it. And so I think for me, I'm definitely thinking a lot about that this time. Make it compelling.
Mimi, thank you so much. Best of luck with Instant.
Cool. Well, thank you so much.